Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. We are still in the throes of the Pennsylvania debates. So I'm going to try to do less editorializing. I'm just going to get over the basic introductories because, yeah, I was kind of boiling a little bit about some compulsion and the definitions of the contract, scriptures, commandments, blah, blah, blah. So anyway, this show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org, and this is the only show that will give you the empirical academic evidence necessary in understanding what the federal government should be doing, what the boundaries of the Constitution are, and what we need to do to get the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution. As I've been kind of pondering while I'm reading these ratification debates, as we're going through these things, this is almost like you're getting an audiobook here. Are you a part of the problem or are you a part of the solution? And the only way you're going to become a part of the solution is if you actively engage in the only solution. Now, how do you actively engage? You get other people to start listening to this show. You get other people to understand the content, getting them to read the concepts of Republic Review. Read the material. And it doesn't take, this is not rocket science. And somebody could actually grasp and fathom what we're doing within a couple of hours. And I know, wow, a couple of hours. But, you know, people can come up with that time in a given week or so. This isn't like you're, you know, packing books and, you know, all of this other resource material to school. And it's not that difficult. So, with that, we also would suggest that if you are looking to support this show, we do have a sponsor, it's Red State Coffee. If you go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org, at the very top of ReclaimingTheRepublic.org, you will get the link to Red State. It's not the very top, but it's towards the top. You'll get a link to Red State Coffee. Go there, buy your coffee, and enjoy yourself some coffee while you're listening to Red State Talk Radio and yours truly, Reclaiming the Republic. This way, as we actually start growing and getting people to understand what the heck we need to be doing, then I am here to tell you, my friends, that with your help, we will be able to reclaim the Republic. We are losing time. If you want to sponsor the show, by all means, just let me know. We have our contact information on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. It's not that hard. We don't hide it anywhere. Anywho, let me just move on to one more thing. We would like to ask you to start thinking about the Constitution and Constitution Day. I know that's months and months away, but before you know it, it'll be too late. Go down to your American car dealers or cars that are made in America, Volkswagens, whatever. Go down, even Toyota, go down and say, hey, you know, why don't you have a promotion to come on in during Constitution Week and we'll give you a Constitution and, you know, and so forth, and make a big deal about it. It'll be a great opportunity in the month of September for a car dealership to, you know, say, whenever you're free, come on down and get your free Constitution. Come on down this week. It is bringing more awareness to the fact, oh, this is Constitution Week. And people getting constitutions is a good thing. It's a start. It's bringing constitutional awareness to your community. Gosh, what could be worse? The other thing, I'll just go on a little tangent and I'll get right back into the ratification debates after this. The other thing that you should be supporting is your state birthday in the union. If you're of the 13 states, when did your state ratify the Constitution? Because that's your birth date. That's the day you bought into the union of this constitutional republic. The state of Washington is November 11th. I believe that November 11th by the state of Washington should be a holiday in recognizing it became a member of the greatest constitutional republic ever. The problem is that Washington State and November 11th happens to be Veterans Day. And oh, the veterans don't want to give up their day. And as far as I'm concerned, if you understand the importance of the Constitution as a veteran, I would much rather be celebrating, because as a Marine, we celebrate the Marine birthday on November 10th. I don't need Veterans Day. Veterans Day was always just a day for everybody to recover from their hangover from celebrating the Marine Corps birthday. But anyway, I would much rather see the state elevate the importance and the consciousness and getting people to actually centering around the Constitution instead of centering around the other details. The Constitution is that important. So anyway, forgive me for going down that little path and, you know, this little distraction. I'm not trying to create distractions, but this is a one-liner that Mr. Wilson made a comment, and I'm going to follow up with what Madison said. This is what Mr. Wilson said. In this Constitution, all authority is derived from the people. Technically, and he's absolutely correct, technically he is correct that all authority in the system that we had is derived from the people, because the people elect the representatives, and then the representatives of the people elect the Senate. So we have ultimate control over all of the pieces, either directly or indirectly, ultimately, in this government. But as Madison made the comment to, you know, actually clarify this even to a better degree, you know, who are the parties to the Constitution? We the people? No. It was we the people of the states. And actually, if you understand, and that was strictly in a constitutional, national constitutional aspect. If you understand the hybrid constitutional republic, that we're supposed to have these constitutions at the state as well, and we're supposed to be abiding by these constitutions, well, then we the people, you know, have our representation in the state. We're supposed to have our representation in the county, and it is our representation that is supposed to fill the and occupy these, or fill the occupancy of these senates. The Senate is not representatives of the people. The Senate is supposed to be the representatives of the sub-element of government, because the sub-element of government at the national level are the states, and they are sovereign because we have delegated in a constitution to them these very specific powers that they are supposed to do. These are the only things that they can do. The problem is when the federal government comes along and creates the Environmental Protection Agency, like I said yesterday, then they violate those powers, because the federal government cannot dictate any role, responsibility, and power to be added to. Show me in the Constitution of your state that the federal government dictates what you're supposed to do and can amend your Constitution. All state constitutions, almost every single one of them, states that the United States Constitution is the supreme law of the land. Well, the Environmental Protection Agency is not a part of the U.S. Constitution, so that is not a supreme law of the land, and it is not a requirement for the states to do that. The only way the state can actually create an Environmental Protection Agency is through an amendment to that Constitution by the people. And don't even get me started. We have so many problems with our state government, but we got to fix the federal government. Getting back to Mr. Wilson, this is what he says in the next citation regarding the Pennsylvania ratification debates. And this is I'll say this again, because most people, we're going to get into a lot of these citations. Mr. Wilson and Mr. McKean were those who addressed the problems of the Anti-Federalists. This is one of the ratification debates that only provides the insights of what was being said in selling the Constitution. They kept record, but they did not put it in the ratification debates. All of the little arguments and the debates and discussions and so forth, they just documented the definitions of how these guys explained the Constitution. So when they ratified it, they go, okay, this is what it's supposed to do, keeping out all of these things that were hyperbolic, you know, thoughts and arguments and rhetoric and so forth. Those things were not included. And this is the only ratification debates that did this. Anyway, the secret is now disclosed, and it is discovered to be a dread that the boasted state sovereignties will, under this system, be disrobed of part of their power. Before I go into the examination of this point, let me ask one important question. Upon what principle is it contended that the sovereign power resides in the state governments? The honorable gentleman has said truly that there is no subordinate sovereignty. Now, if there cannot, my position is that the sovereignty resides in the people. They have not parted with it. They have only dispensed portions of power as we're convinced necessary to the public welfare. This Constitution stands upon the broad principle, I know very well, sir, that the people have hitherto been shut out of the federal government, but it is not meant that they should any longer be disposed of their rights. In order to recognize this, and we'll get back to the in order when we come back, because we've got this promos. So please stay tuned, and we're going to get into what Mr. Wilson says, because he does reference a lot that the power resides in the people. And so that's why yesterday I talked about the delegations of power, that the constitutions of these different sovereignties actually do exist, and American republicanism. But we'll be right back after these words. Thank you. Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue.
So here's one of the problems that I recognize that I failed to kind of communicate and clarify. And that problem is this, that with the understanding of the states and understanding their makeup, demographics, and so forth, it helps when you start understanding like the culture. In Pennsylvania, these were Quakers. In Pennsylvania, there was a different paradigm than you will find in Massachusetts, which were the Puritans, which they heavily regarded and spoke of, you know, the religious aspects of the Constitution. And then in Virginia, the economics and the legal, you know, concepts and so forth. I mean, Virginia was probably the most heated and the most, I say, insightful. New York and New Jersey, I wasn't really impressed. And you know this when I talk about Hamilton and the New York ratification debates. But North Carolina and Virginia were probably the most insightful getting into details of the Constitution that many other states didn't. I mean, they all got into different perspectives. And it's interesting how they all had these different perspectives. But as I point out to people, there is no inconsistency regarding the fact that we have an enumerated constitution that delegates very specific and defined powers, as Mr. Wilson had already even said, and you find those exact same concepts in every single ratification debate. What you have is harmony. You have harmony on the concepts and principles of the Constitution as you read through these different debates. Now, the focus and the lens may be different. And so if you spend a lot of time in just one debate, you may take on the paradigm of that culture. And in Pennsylvania, that paradigm of the culture is we the people, we're the sovereigns. So anyway, and it overemphasizes one particular point over the other point of real republicanism and the fact that we do delegate power to create sovereign governments to actually legislate and be sovereigns over us. He even acknowledges that, but he keeps on relying on this fact that we're the ultimate sovereigns. And to me, I think it gets overplayed a little. But then, you know, I'm one of those guys that maybe a little bit analytical and or discerning or what have you. Anyway, he goes on and says this: in order to recognize this leading principle, the proposed system sets out with a declaration that its existence depends upon the supreme authority of the people alone. We have heard much about a consolidated government. I wish the honorable gentleman would condescend to give us a definition of what he meant by it. I think this is more necessary because I apprehend that the term, in the numerous times it has been used, has not always been used in the same sense. It may be said, and I believe it has been said, that a consolidated government is, as such, will absorb and destroy the governments of the several states. If it is not taken in this view, then the plan before us is not a consolidated government. As I showed on a former day, and may, if necessary, show further on some future occasion, on the other hand, it is meant that the general government will take from the states their power in some particulars. It is confessed evident that this will be its operation and effect. And if you understand the concept of the national government, the only thing that, you know, other than taxation, the only thing the federal government really had any links to within the states was really the militia and the national defense and so forth. Go through the enumerated powers. They don't have any control. The only control over commerce was just to make sure that the states couldn't leverage or take advantage of each other, like the coastal states, because they had access to foreign commerce and so forth. They couldn't levy taxes on those goods coming through. The whole reason the Commerce Clause was given and placed in the Constitution is for that one reason, to protect the states from other states trying to take advantage or ganging up on other states, coastal states with the hinterland states and so forth. And so if you understand the limitations of the Constitution and what it delegated to the general government in that enumerated powers, you'll clearly understand that the federal government hardly has anything at all to do with things that are within the states. And Madison said this in the Federalist Papers as well. Anyway, in the next citation, Mr. Wilson says this: when I made the observation that some politicians would say the supreme power was lodged in our state constitutions, I did not suspect that the honorable gentleman from Westmoreland, Mr. Finley, was included in that description. But I find myself disappointed, for I imagined his opposition would arise from another consideration. His position is that the supreme power resides in the states as governments, and mine is that it resides in the people as the fountain of government, that the people have not, that the people meant not, and the people ought not to part with any government whatsoever. In their hands it remains secure. They can delegate it as such proportions to such bodies on such terms and under such limitations as they think proper. I agree with the members in opposition that there cannot be two sovereigns on the same subject. And that's pretty important that people understand that. That when it comes down to what's best for your health care, there was no delegation whatsoever. Madison talked about this during the bounty, cod fishery bounty debates in 1792. That government was only instituted for these very specific principles and objects. That, you know, we were not to take over education. That was left to the religious aspects of our society. It's the same thing with medical, religious aspect of our society. The same thing with compassionate services or welfare. And that's why he used shock value when he says, hey, if we start using the public purse, next thing you know, the government's going to take over schools. And everybody was aghast in Congress going, oh, there's no way the government's ever meant to do that. And they knew that, but he was pointing out that as we start progressing down this path of doing things we're not supposed to do, the next thing you know, we start doing things that, or they start doing things that they have no business doing. And as I tell people, it's just around the corner before they actually create the Department of Babysitting. Because there's too many people out there filling their kids' heads with religious dogma that is just, it goes against the narrative. I mean, how are they going to be able to convince your kids that sexual morphine and disgender, you know, or gender dysphoria so that they can sexualize themselves into anything that they want to be? How can they get away with doing that if you're filling your kids' heads with religious dogma? That's how Hillary put it in her book. She didn't talk about the gender stuff, but she did talk about religious dogma that social workers needed to be assigned to every household that had a child. If you don't understand what they're showing in these cards that they're holding, that's where they want to go. And if you understand Russia, that's how they went with that's the necessity of Plato's Republic. But anyway, let me keep going. I consider the people of the United States as forming one great community. And I consider the people of the different states as forming communities again on a lesser scale. From this great division of the people into district or distinct communities, it will be found necessary that different proportions of legislative power should be given to the governments according to the nature, number, and magnitude of their objects. Did you know that the Department of, I'm going down this path here, because it just popped in my head. Did you know that the Department of Transportation, because when we look at local roads, you know, highways, state highways or what have you, that Washington, D.C. is trying to control and manage our traffic from there. This is why every state in the union is getting roundabouts instead of lights on state highways and other roadways that federal government is helping these communities fund. Isn't that so nice of them? It's all about traffic calming, and it's all about changing your attitude. And what they're doing is they're forcing you, they're forcing inconveniences upon you to convince you that living out in rural areas is not a desirable thing, because the more roundabouts they put on your highway, the less you have the ability to maintain. Instead of a 20-minute commute, it could turn into a 30, 40-minute commute if you have a bunch of roundabouts in between you and getting into where you work or what have you on these state and rural roads. Anyway, let me finish what Mr. Wilson is saying. He says this: unless the people are considered in these two views, we shall never be able to understand the principle on which this system was constructed. I view the states as made for the people as well as by them, and not the people as made for the states. The people, therefore, have a right whilst enjoying the undeniable powers of society to form either a general government or state governments in what manner they please, or to accommodate them to another, and by this means preserve them all. This, I say, is the inherent and unalienable right of the people. And as an illustration of it, I beg to read a few words from the Declaration of Independence made by the representatives of the United States and recognized by the whole Union. And so then he goes into that, and I'm not going to read that, but we'll get into his next comment. But the one thing that I think is worth really pointing out is this concept of, you know, kind of creating these unique governments and general governments. To be clear, the Constitution actually dictated, just to correct Mr. Wilson, that state governments must be Republican in form, and we get into American republicanism a lot. We'll be back.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
And so one of the things that was kind of revealing in what he just said, and I'm going to go back to this, the undeniable powers of society to form either a general government or state governments in what manner they please, or to accommodate them to one another. And what he was basically saying, and you realize that what they actually created was not a general government. They created a general government per se because they had to have a federal body to do the execution of national security, to, you know, protect us, as well as to, you know, fight our wars, those types of things, and to support the infrastructure of an army. And that infrastructure of the United States Army, I'll go as far as to say this, that the United States Army is unconstitutional, that the concept of creating that standing army goes outside the framework of the Constitution. We have literally two standing armies in America that go outside the concept of the Constitution, the U.S. Army being one. And the second is all the federal enforcement agencies to enforce federal law upon the states. That is the epitome of federal tyranny, because As you know, only the militia has the executive, or I should say, the power to execute the laws of the Union. Only the militia. That statement was never delegated to any agency or any entity. Now, the Congress, in other amendments, Congress has the power to enforce, but the way and mechanism for Congress to enforce is calling forth the Union, or calling forth the militia to execute the laws of the Union. So in other words, the IRS, I'm sorry if you work at the IRS, I'm sorry, but you're working in a position that is not within the framework of the Constitution. It's just that simple. And it was very simple for the federal government, if they wanted to assume a new power, the way to do that would have been through an amendment. So if you're part of the IRS, if you're part of the Department of Housing and Urban Development, go convince the federal government to try to amend the Constitution to give them the power to do those things that you're doing right now. Because if not, and we get Republic Review moving, you're going to end up losing your job because the federal government has no business doing those things. And all of that stuff has to be returned back to the states. And I'll bet you anything that if it was presented as an amendment to the Constitution to grant the federal government to regulate housing to however they want to and do the things that they're doing now, I'm sorry, the states would not delegate that power. That power would be dismantled and it would be drawn back. So if you're working in the federal government, it's not that, those things won't go away, but you'll probably be able to move to California to where you can be a part of that bureaucracy and managing housing, or maybe Illinois to Chicago or some of these other states that, you know, for some reason or another, they like to induce blight. And so, you know, anyway, I move on. The next citation from Mr. Wilson is a good one. It's good and long. It's two paragraphs. It talks about state sovereignty. And he says this: state sovereignty, as it is called, is far from being able to support its weight. Nothing less than the authority of the people could either support it or give it its efficacy. I cannot pass over this subject without noticing the different conduct pursued by the late federal convention and that observed by the convention which framed the Constitution of Pennsylvania. On that occasion, you find an attempt made to deprive the people of this right. So lately and so expressly asserted in the Declaration of Independence, we are told in the preamble of the Declaration of Independence and frame of the government that we do by virtue of authority vested in us ordain, declare, and establish the following Declaration of Rights framed of government to be the Constitution of this Commonwealth and to remain in force therein mattered, except in such articles as shall hitherto on experience be found to require improvement and which shall, by the same authority of the people, fairly delegate as this frame of government directs. An honorable gentleman, Mr. Chambers, was well warranted in saying that all that could be done was done to cut off the people from the right of amending, for it cannot be amended by any other mode than by which it directs any more than one-third may control the less of the two-thirds. But I return to my general reasoning. My position is, sir, that in this country, the supreme, absolute, and uncontrollable power resides in the people at large, that they have vested certain proportions of this power in the state governments, but that the fee simple continues, resides in, remains with the body of the people. Yeah, I read it right. Under the practical influence of this great truth, we are now sitting and deliberating, and under its operation, we can sit as calmly and deliberate as coolly in order to change a constitution as a legislature can sit and deliberate under the power of a constitution in order to alter or amend a law. It is true that the exercise of power will not probably be so frequent nor resorted to on so many occasions in one case as to the other, but the recognition of the principle cannot fail to establish it more firmly. But because this recognition is made in the proposed Constitution, an exception is taken to the whole of it. For we are told it is a violation of the present Confederation, a confederation of sovereign states. I shall not enter into an investigation of the present Confederation, but shall just remark that its principle is not the principle of free governments. The principle of the United States are not, as such, represented in the present Congress and considered even as the component parts of the several states. They are not represented in a portion to their numbers and importance. You know, one of the things that was really telling during the Constitutional Convention was when they were just trying to lay out what kind of government it should be and how the government would be laid out or distributed, the apportionment of representation, because everybody agreed they wanted a Republican form of government, but how was the apportionment to be done? Now, the Virginia plan was apportionment by population, that the states that had less population would have far less representation, that Virginia, New York, and Massachusetts would rule the rest of the other 10 states because they had the highest populations. Well, you know, the smaller states didn't like that. So the New Jersey plan came back and created equal footing for everybody, that the little states like Rhode Island could continually hold back the rest of the states. Well, that, you know, so that wasn't good either. The Sherman Compromise or the Connecticut Compromise was recognizing sovereignty at two different levels. I think Mr. Wilson missed this, that the people are sovereigns and need to have the representation. But the sovereigns of the people, the sub-element of government being the states, they also needed representation. So the states would have equal representation and the people would have proportionate representation based on population. That was the first time that concept had ever been deployed. And so when they were done with the United States Constitution and it was ratified, every state reconfigured their legislative bodies in one fashion or another. There were a few states, like the House of Burgesses, that had two bodies of legislative bodies. And they reconfigured so that the Senate would be representative of the counties and that the House of Representatives in each of the states represented the people of the counties. In other words, each county was guaranteed basic representation. They could not fathom, and it was not within their paradigm, that we would blur county lines to allow a population center to dictate and have more control over the republic of a state. So anyway, let me get back to this next, because I realize I just went down a tangent on republicanism. Mr. Wilson's next comment is this. It is urged as a general objection to this system that the powers of Congress are unlimited and undefined, and that they will be the judges in all cases of what is necessary and proper for them to do. To bring this subject to your view, I need do no more than point to the words in the Constitution, beginning in the 8th section, article, the first article, and says, quote, "The Congress shall have power," and etc. I read not over the words, but I leave it to the gentleman to say whether the powers are not as accurately and minutely defined as can be done in the same subject. In the same language, the Constitution is strongly marked on, because it says Congress shall have the power to. In other words, and then they list the powers. And so he didn't want to list the powers. He just said, you know, this is what they're given the power to. And even the concluding clause with which so much fault has been found, which is the necessary and proper clause, gives no more power, nor does it in any degree go beyond the particular enumeration for which it is said that Congress shall have the power to make all laws which shall be necessary and proper. Those words are limited and denned by the following: for carrying into execution the foregoing powers. It is saying no more than the powers that we have already particularly given shall be effectually carried into execution. So that ends that comment. We'll be back with the next one right after these two promos. So please stay tuned. We've got more good meat to chew on.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
Okay, so in this next citation, this is actually one of the few where there is a mention of the word or the term Bill of Rights. Okay, now Mr. Wilson says this: there are two kinds of government. That where general power is intended to be given to the legislature, and that where the powers are particularly enumerated. In the last case, the implied result is that nothing more is intended to be given than what is so enumerated, unless it results from the nature of government itself. And I'm going to pause right there. So there's nothing in the Constitution that says the federal government will have a general accounting office, but they absolutely need a general accounting office to, you know, order the pens, to order the to take care of the buildings and administering all of that. So when people started understanding the role of government, when they created the federal government in the first year, they created a general accounting office. That general accounting office has grown, and it has grown, and they have taken from it in creating things like, because the general accounting office was actually the one, I believe, that was taking care of the territories that were on the path to becoming states, because we didn't have a Department of Interior or a Department of Home. Where was that job being done? Well, the General Accounting Office kind of took possession of the properties and needful things and so forth and said, okay, this is, you know, how, and Congress managed all of that, and the government managed all of that. But the General Accounting Office is not, again, in the Constitution. And obviously, it was necessary and proper for them to have and do, but it wasn't necessary and proper to take some of those roles and expound. And as I've said before, the Department of Interior was a last-ditch effort to recognize that the federal government wasn't going to have territories to play around with anymore. And they wanted to be able to have this office to actually start dictating. This is where, because the whole concept of treaties in a state with another entity, another sovereign entity within a state, is it's impossible. Once you create the state, you cannot have a sub-government that is independent and sovereign separate from that state. In other words, two states in a state. And if you understand what they did with the treaties with the Indians, that's exactly what they did. And what they're doing today with these Muslim communities that they're, you know, they're some prince of Saudi Arabia is buying up land and creating these small states in a state. That defies the sovereignty of the state itself. And the politicians that are approving these types of things, they've made a mess. We've got to fix these things up, but nobody should be approving states within the state anymore. And the fact that they're doing this, and as a matter of fact, the concept of laws being followed and practiced within a state that aren't being acknowledged, the state laws are not being acknowledged within its own state boundaries, is unconscionable. Just so you understand the problem that was created by the federal government trying to create these hooks and then creating a Department of Interior and then owning supposedly these territories, or I should say reservations. And reservations have grown to this concept. It's not just reservations for people or Indians and indigenous folks. It's also for trees. It's also for, you know, grasshoppers or fleas and so forth, and fish smelts. These are all unconstitutional. Anyway, as it goes on, he says, I believe the honorable speakers in opposition on this floor were members of the assembly, which appointed delegates to that convention. If it had been thought proper to have sent them into that body, how luminous would the dark conclave have been? And so I think he's just basically pointing them in the eye, poking them in the eye and saying, hey, look, you know, you're the ones that actually sent them in there. And you're telling us now that you're guilty of sending them into these dark enclaves and so forth. Anyway, this is another talk about enumerations in the Bill of Rights. Even in a single government, if the powers of the people rest on the same establishment as is expressed in this Constitution, a Bill of Rights is by no means a necessary measure. In a government possessed of enumerated rights, such a measure would not only be unnecessary, but preposterous and dangerous. See, they were all saying the same thing. Whence this notion in the United States, there is no security without a Bill of Rights? Have the citizens of South Carolina no security for their liberties? They have no Bill of Rights. Are the citizens of the eastern side of Delaware less free or less secure in their liberties than those on the western side? The state of New Jersey has no Bill of Rights. The state of New York has no Bill of Rights. The states of Connecticut and Rhode Island have no Bill of Rights. I know not whether I have exactly enumerated the states who have not thought it necessary to add a Bill of Rights to their constitutions, but this enumeration, sir, will serve to show by experience as well as principle that even in single governments, a Bill of Rights is not an essential or necessary measure. But in a government consisting of enumerated powers, such as is proposed for the United States, a Bill of Rights would not only be unnecessary, but in my humble judgment, highly imprudent. All societies there are many powers and rights which cannot be particularly enumerated. A Bill of Rights annexed to a constitution is an enumeration of powers reserved. If we attempt an enumeration, everything that is not enumerated is presumed to be given. The consequence is that an imperfect enumeration would throw all implied power into the scale of government, and the rights of the people would be rendered incomplete. On the other hand, an imperfect enumeration of the powers of government reserves all implied powers to the people, and by that means, the Constitution becomes incomplete. But of the two, it is much safer to run the risk on the side of the Constitution, for an omission in enumeration of powers of government is neither so dangerous nor important as an omission in the enumeration of the rights of the people. Now, the interesting thing is, and I want to point this out, that the Bill of Rights that Madison created did not construe, because the Ninth and Tenth Amendments said anything not delegated is reserved. In other words, even though the federal government created these powers that they couldn't touch, the freedom of speech, religious expression, they couldn't seize, you know, and execute laws without, or searches without warrants, the right to bear arms, all of these bill, or what you find in the Bill of Rights, are these exclusions or reservations placed, or nugatory powers placed on government. Those did not open the door to say, hey, because we didn't list this. And a good example is privacy. The concept of the rights of privacy was not an enumerated power. That doesn't mean that the government has jurisdiction over privacy. It wasn't listed. It wasn't given. Therefore, there is no jurisdiction. In listing and granting, there is still the limitation of jurisdiction of those things. So in other words, when it came down to the concept of abortion, the federal government has no jurisdiction because, one, the concept was designed by Blackmun in the opinion of Roe v. Wade, that emanations from penumbras basically suggested that there was this concept or this right of privacy when a person goes into Planned Parenthood. And they didn't say abortions were legal. They just said that you have a right of privacy to go into Planned Parenthood to kill your baby. That's all that they were saying. And instantly that got twisted into this concept that now abortion is legal. The fact of the matter is this, folks, is that the Bill of Rights only created nugatory powers against these things. That didn't mean that they needed nugatory powers, but they wanted to make extra special these very particular powers that were to not be treaded on at all. The Constitution, being enumerated, only granted them the ability to exercise these powers. So if it's something that may not have been listed, it didn't change the fact that if it wasn't granted or protected, it still had no jurisdiction. Housing isn't protected, the right of housing, right? The right of energy or your water, those things weren't protected. Well, that means that they can regulate them? No, because they weren't enumerated either. And so the whole concept, if you read the preface or the preamble to the Bill of Rights, the concept of the Bill of Rights was to create just greater restrictions on these very specific things, but not granting access to all things not listed and all things not enumerated. In other words, we had a very, very, I'll just say the framers were very, very cautious and scared to death of government. And so that's why they added extra negative powers and only gave them a list of powers that they could execute. That, in essence, is a very paranoid people, not a people that wanted general powers to be granted to the general government. We'll be back with Pennsylvania in our next episode. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org and go to the contributions page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty.